When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's not about me. I'm only here for a minute, and I know that I can't fix it. I can help even just a little bit. Won't you let me try?
Hello and welcome to a new Laz and Powers podcast. I am Mark Lazarus, joined in person, a rare treat, by Scott Powers. We're from The Athletic. This is a show about the Blackhawks, ostensibly.
Maybe.
At some point, we might just start talking about Irish cinema. I don't know, because it's getting pretty depressing around here, Scott.
We finally saw a movie both. We've seen a couple movies this last year we both saw. But yeah, the fact that you saw Banshees of Inisherin.
Oh, it was great. Yeah. It was really, really good. Highly recommended. The saddest comedy you'll ever see.
Yeah, it was the great thing. It's just like one of his plays. Like that's what his plays, like Lieutenant Inishmore and all the plays that he's done. That they're all like it felt like one of his plays. And
see, it's funny because like I don't know this guy at all.
Yeah, and well, you've seen in Bruges, yeah.
I've seen in Bruges, yeah. But I don't know the auteur behind it.
Yeah, yeah.
And my first thing I said to you was like, oh, it felt like a play.
Yeah.
And you tell me he's a playwright. I'm like, all right, well that makes sense. Yeah, like, yeah. All right, I'm a savvy viewer.
I have a buddy in Dublin. He works at this clothing shop, and Brendan Gleeson comes in there occasionally. And my buddy, like, he's a big, you know, big Martin McDonagh fan, too. And Brendan Gleeson came in there, and he's like, oh, I've watched, he was telling Brendan Gleeson he's watched the promo, like,
trailer.
Trailer, like you know, multiple times. He's like, well, don't get too excited. It's sort of like a play. And my buddy was just as excited, but it was just. Well,
yeah. Martin McDonagh, he did 3 billboards outside of Ebbings, Missouri, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was. I didn't like that as much as a lot of people like.
No, I didn't like that either.
It's one of those movies where you can tell, all right, this is like a really good filmmaker making this movie, but I'm not particularly enjoying it.
Yeah, there's what's the other one too? Is it 3 Psychopaths? There's another Psychopaths movie too.
As you can tell, we're very prepared for this podcast.
Yeah, no, it's anything to delay the actual hockey talk today. But yeah, when's the last time we did this in person?
I don't know. It just seems easier to do it on Zoom these days. You and I are very, like, the beauty of our job, of having two of us on this beat, is we don't both have to be anywhere. If I'm on the road, you're getting a day off. If you're on the road, I'm getting
a day
off.
And honestly, just with how the team is, like, if the team was good, like, would there be
we'd be all over it.
Yeah, like, there were days that when, I guess early on when you first joined The Athletic, Blackhawks were somewhat relevant then?
Yeah, they were relevant.
Yeah.
They were relevant.
Yeah, they were this season more than any, or even toward the end
it's
of
crazy.
Last season.
It's crazy.
We stopped, joining being.
We spent all summer talking about how, all right, well, we're going to have to dial back our coverage. We're not going to have to write every day. We're not going to write every game. What do? We still write every goddamn day.
Yeah. It's less and less about the game, though.
Like, that's right. Yes.
We're figuring out stuff to write after the morning skate that it's going to fill for the game coverage because. I don't know what the fans are like, but these games are just.
I just can't imagine anyone cares about the X's and O's of this team when most of these guys aren't going to be here on the other end.
Someone emailed me the other day about asking about, you know, how does Luke Richardson's system fit in the future, which is.
That's a good question.
Yeah,
sure.
it's just without having the personnel, it's hard to say like what like he plays. His zone system and a lot of stuff they do. Other teams do is just you need good players to perform.
Well, if this was a relevant team going through a slump. We would be all over the fact that they can't score.
Yeah.
They cannot score goals. But it's like, why would we analyze why they can't score goals? They can't score goals because they were designed to not be able to score goals.
Yeah. And that's the odd part. I was actually talking to a friend today about covering a team that's struggling, and he was mentioning one of our common friends, James Edwards, who covers the Pistons for us, The Athletic, and how that it's interesting for him because you got like 4 or 5 players who are considered part of the future of the Pistons, you know?
Right.
And when you look at this team, maybe Kuryshev.
Well, you can go back 2 years ago to the COVID season, 2021, where that team was rebuilding and torn down to pretty much the studs we thought as far as you could. But they had DeBrincat.
There
were guys that were worth focusing on. You look at this roster, and like you said, maybe Phil Kuryshev's here when this is all said and done.
Yeah.
Like this, nobody here is going to matter. Everyone
but even
that
the guys like
else.
They acquired like Radish and stuff. Like I've heard that you know like if we get offered with the right price, like they're not guys that were like
literally everyone is for sale. Right? I talked to Connor Murphy this morning about him. just, you know, because, you know, there's nothing a GM loves more than a veteran defenseman. And, you know, Murphy, he said it himself. He's like, I'm on a pretty big contract, but he's really not. He's on a $4.4 million contract, which for a second pairing defenseman is a good deal in the current economic climate. You can see what defensemen are getting. And he's got 3 years left. And, you know, some people might say that's a hindrance, but that could also be more attractive because a lot of teams don't like doing the rentals.
Yeah.
Well, maybe if you can get someone with term and a contract you like, maybe why wouldn't you be looking at a contract?
It just doesn't happen that often.
Like, it doesn't.
It,
no.
It's just.
But if you're a player on this team,
yeah,
you can't help but think I might be next.
Yeah, or hoping to be next.
There's literally There's literally nobody on this team that is untouchable.
No.
If Kane and Taves are highly touchable, and they are highly touchable.
I think Kevin Gorzynski is the only one in the organization that's probably untouchable.
In the organization, yeah. But, you know, it's amazing where things are at. And, you know, with that in mind, we wanted to go over our trade board and maybe expand a little bit on what we think about each guy here. We had that running on.
I feel like that was some of the questions that came with it. So why didn't you put McCabe or why Murphy? And we talked about it afterward, maybe we should, but it's that term, and it's just you don't see it around the deadline. Like if it's a guy like Hagel who's often traded with term because it's like, well, at 1.25 for 3 years, this makes a lot of sense. Or a guy like Radish who, you know, has an extra year of the deal. You don't see that many guys who aren't rentals. And part of it, like, as good as McCabe is, and he's arguably been the Blackhawks' best defenseman, he hasn't been healthy for a full season in a while.
Yeah.
And to be banking on that, and even at $4 million, it's a lower cost, but you're still, I don't know. I feel like you're betting on a small sample size.
Well, I've had a couple people reach out from Edmonton asking, you know, do they think the Blackhawks would move him? And of course, they would move anybody at this point.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean it's going to happen.
Mm.
You know, it's a nice idea. McCabe would be a great piece for a team like Edmonton. It makes sense. There's a reason that other people have connected those two before also. But, you know, he's only got, he's got 2 years left at $4 million a year. That's a really good contract for a healthy Jake McCabe. But we still are only not even halfway through the season. We don't know.
Well, this year and then 2 years yet, right?
Yeah, two more years after the season. We don't know if this is a healthy Jake McCabe yet
because
we haven't seen one. So he's got to do it for, you know, he's got to still be healthy come early March, and then maybe someone's willing to take a flyer.
We're talking about 36 games here, right?
Yeah, basically. And you're not going to get a first-round pick for him.
Well, I don't even know if he played, but he didn't play, so he's not even 36 games personally.
No, probably not.
Yeah.
So, I mean, whatever you get for him, it's not going to be a lot.
Well, I guess that's
you,
the other...
You get to free up roster space
to
have young kids, but as you and I keep talking about, you need to have some money on the
books.
That's
the other part of it. It's like, it's some of these guys, like, we mentioned Domi, and if the Blackhawks can get a high first, second-round pick, which maybe, I don't know if it's realistic, but if they can get that, for sure they'll trade Domi, but they need to fill cap space, especially if Kane and Taves are going. They need to get to the floor.
That's $21 million.
Yeah, and they're a team that's not anywhere near the ceiling even now, so they need players to spend. So if someone's offering you only a fourth or fifth round for Domi, and Domi's happy here, and Domi's and you like having Domi here, then there are some people who are going to be overpaid next year just because that's what the Blackhawks need to get to the...
Well, yeah, the salary cap floor this year is $61 million.
Yeah, 61.5 or something.
And I'm looking at cap friendly right now, and the Hawks have 76.5 on the books right now. You're losing $21 million of that just by losing Taves and Kane. You're probably going to trade a bunch of other guys too.
Well, you're also losing Duncan Keith's $5 million.
And that's right.
I went through cap friendlies. I did it 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I started building a roster for next year, and it's like, all right, well, this guy comes up, and you figure if they get Bedard and whomever they draft, probably you have a lot of young guys on ELCs, and you have Reichel, and you probably have Vlasic and Korchinski. Those guys make nothing, right? So all of a sudden, like, I was like $20 million, $20+ million short. Like, it was crazy. Yeah. It's like, unless you're paying Tenorti at a $15 million rate coming to sign.
Wouldn't it be amazing if they just did that? Like, that was their way of dealing with the cap. They said, here, Jared Tenorti, we are 17.6. You want to be the highest player in NHL history for 1 year?
Yeah.
Yes, I do. That'd be amazing.
I mean, that's basically like...
It's not like Rocky can't afford it.
Yeah, but, I mean, they have to. And someone was talking, and I need to figure out what the penalty is for not hitting
the floor. That's a good question. Are you even allowed to field a team if you're under the floor?
The NHL needs teams. So someone mentioned they thought I need to look into this, and I'm sure listeners will berate us for not having the answer. But someone said they thought that the rest of the team divides the amount and then gets paid the additional.
Well, that'd be interesting.
So yeah, I don't. I'll when we get done with this, I'll
I feel like if that were the case, then Arizona would have been doing that for years rather than taking on contracts.
Yeah, maybe. Well, I guess what the Arizona did though is that they were just taking on cap hits. They weren't actually paying people, right? Like that was the benefit. So like,
well, there's back diving contracts like the Hossa one. They were paying really small cash, or they were getting insurance.
Like, so that way you're not actually having to pay the money too. So like, there's a nice.
But again, the money Rocky doesn't. You know, Rocky's got the money.
I feel like the Blackhawks are still. There's somewhat money.
They've been pinching pennies a lot more since COVID. There's no question. They've cut a lot of fat.
My biggest question is, what happens if Kane and Taves aren't here? Like, I don't know if you've walked around the concessions or anything in this building, but
it's all Kane and Taves.
It's all Kane and Taves jerseys.
I was walking in today, just now, when we walk in, we come in through the atrium for morning
skates.
I don't
think you can sell someone else's jersey when they're gone, right?
I was walking by the team set, and it's more Bulls stuff than it is Hawks stuff these days.
The Bulls are bad too,
but they got at least some marketable people on them. And it's just Taves and Kane. Like, when you walk around the United Center, I don't know if I've ever seen a Seth Jones jersey.
No.
Like, he's a superstar player in theory on this team. You're number one defenseman. I've never seen anybody wearing a Seth Jones jersey.
And I don't know if we would have saw Seabrook and some of those guys if you don't put the success, right? Like, for certain types of defensemen and stuff, like, you're not a fan of them unless they're winning defensemen.
In the last couple of years, you saw DeBrincat. That was the only guy you saw that wasn't Kane, Taves, or a, you know, championship-era player.
Yeah, I don't... I saw a couple Hagels, maybe? Maybe a couple Docs. There's a couple Docs out there.
Like, Korchinski will sell jerseys if he's here next year. You know?
Well, because they have to. Like, I guess...
Because they'll just have to, yeah. They're going to have to hitch their star to him and go, you better be good, buddy. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of secondary.
Like, if there's Connor Bedard, like, this place is just full of.
Oh, it's gonna be all Bedard jerseys.
Oh, it's just Italy. Yeah, like, that's their dream. Because like, ultimately, like Fantilli and Carlson, they may all be nice players, but they're not as marketable as Connor Bedard. You know, like it would be the perfect marketing.
Yeah. Does Connor Bedard wear like number 5 because he was born in 2005? He was born in. He's like a zygote. Good God! In 2005, how old are we? Jesus. Anyway, you know, for years, all these players like McDavid wore 97 because he was born in 97. Kane wore 88 because he was born in 88. I mean, 5 is taken by Murphy, but I don't know what number. He's wearing number 16 at World Juniors. I mean, I guess that's Jujhar Kara's number now. So
it's always Kruger's number.
It's Andrew Ladd. But yes, Connor Bedard will change.
Kruger had to take a different number when he came back.
Here's the deal.
Is that right or no?
He did, yeah, because Andrew Ladd had it. Yeah, he was wearing like 22, and I was freaking out every time I saw it. I was like, what the hell is that? If Connor Bedard, if they get Connor Bedard, every single aspect of this discussion changes. Even Adam Fantilli or Leo Carlson do not do what Connor Bedard does.
No.
You bring in Bedard, jersey sales, all of a sudden you're going to be adding a lot of free agents this coming summer. Like, okay, you're not trying to win the cup next year, but all of a sudden you're trying to get better. You want good people around.
I think regardless of who they get there, they want, like, from what I heard, they
can't
want,
be this bad again next year.
No, they understand that. And they also know that whoever they draft, they need to play them with some players. They need
But Adam Fantilli, who it looks by all accounts awesome, like legitimate number one pick in any other year, is not Connor Bedard.
No, and that's
Bedard changes. Every conversation.
I think Michkov's the second most interesting player, at least from like a marketing perspective. But he's not coming over. But he's got something like it to him. You know.
Here's the thing, though. The Blackhawks, and we discussed this a little bit during the skate. Like, there's no chance now in my mind, zero chance they don't finish dead last this year. No chance. They are going to be 15 points clear of anybody else by the time. They are so bad. This is the worst hockey team I've ever seen. Columbus can't hold a candle to these guys in terms of being bad. The Hawks are going to get a top three pick.
Yeah.
In my mind, that means there's no chance they draft Matt Gabe.
I was told that the other day too.
Not an option.
I think the fact that Carlson's emerged as this player that it sort of lets the Blackhawks off the hook.
Do you think the Russian factor, and this is so unfair to even say, but just because of the stigma attached to Russia right now with the war in Ukraine, do you think that would it be tough to market a Russian superstar, a young Russian superstar, in this climate, this geopolitical climate?
I'd be curious about his politics, right? Wouldn't you like?
I would certainly want to know.
Yeah,
I don't know if he would say anything, but
no, but I'm sure that some of that's the fact that he doesn't play for SKA or so. Where was he before? But he's been traded around. But the fact that
he's not. He doesn't have Putin as his fucking Instagram photo like Ovechkin does. But I would wonder, like, would people warm up to him, or would they be just naturally?
But I don't feel like
it's
that
not his fault.
It hasn't been obviously Kaprizov's been more vocal the other way,
right?
So I think there's a map for someone who
I just wonder, because just
like I've heard more comparisons to Kaprizov than anyone
for
Michkov. Like, he I was gonna say on the ice, where he's that type of player.
Well, yeah, he's supposed to be an amazing player.
Yeah.
But the this is all a side discussion. The fact that he won't be eligible to come to the NHL for 3 years is why the Hawks won't sign.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Like, they cannot be just wandering
in the wasteland. But if Fantilli and...
I'm telling you, Arizona is the perfect place for Michkov, because what happens in 3 or 4 years? They have a new arena.
Yeah.
The timing would be beautiful. They could just limp along in Mullet Arena and acquire draft picks and tank for 3 years where it doesn't matter. And then you have a superstar to build around and to showcase. Like, if there's going to be any conspiracy here, it's going to be guiding Michkov to the Arizona Coyotes.
I do think Fantilli and Carlson's emergence is because I think otherwise there'd be an issue. Like,
Michkov was that makes good, it a lot easier.
And if he's
Carlson's emergence is really important for them.
Yeah.
Because it gives them
But again, if you don't get the number one pick, like, I still feel like this year is somewhat like, yeah, Fantilli and Carlson may be fine, but it's...
I mean, Fantilli could be Jack Eichel, and Jack Eichel is fucking great, but he's not Connor McDavid.
No. The easy comparison has been Taves, but I still don't think Taves is Taves without Kane, right? Like, it's just... Right. It's Bedard's just... It's that offense. It's... I mean, the Blackhawks are going to need regardless, but...
It was off-putting last night when... my entire Canadian timeline, and, you know, I follow a ton of Canadian Twitter, was going nuts over that Connor Bedard game-winning goal against Slovakia in the quarterfinals World Juniors, like 10 minutes after DeMar Hamlin collapsed on the field. It was really weird, but, you know, hours later I went and I watched that video, and holy fuck, that was a great goal by Connor Bedard. He is unbelievable. He is everything everybody said he was, and then something.
Now, someone had posted some analytics the other day about it. It was like shots and passes created by individuals, and like, he was just like, it was so far off the map.
And
like, it wasn't just the shots, but it's what,
like, World Juniors is a pretty good, you know, harbinger of what they're going to be, because you're going up against, at least, you know, you're certainly facing better talent at World Juniors than you are in the WHL.
They're talking about, like, I mean, his numbers are now compared to, like, Forsberg and world talent. He looks, right? Like, he's breaking Canadian records.
There's an electricity factor.
This isn't like a Shane Wright, like, maybe he's good. This guy's... Right.
There's an it factor to this guy where he's doing things. It's not just that he's putting up points. It's the manner in which he's doing it.
Yeah.
Taking on three players, just going one on three and just dancing around. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, no,
like, this guy, you know, nothing's a sure thing. And I made this comment, you know, where you look at Alexis Lafreniere in New York right now and he's getting benched. I remember a few years ago, if you Google Lafreniere and generational, like, a year before his draft, Alexis Lafreniere was the next Connor McDavid. He was a generational talent. He was that good.
Yeah.
And he's not. He is a perfectly fine player who's struggling to stay in the lineup.
Maybe I just don't recall that, but I don't, like, I think
maybe not to recall, maybe not, like, to the level of salivation we're having over Bedard, but the word generational,
because Bedard's been like three or 4 years out now. Yes. Like, they knew that this
it's was, like, McDavid. It was the same thing with McDavid.
I feel like Michkov and Bedard have been the one that talked for a few years, and then just the way that Bedard has continued to, like,
I feel like Bedard is...
At this age, like, it's sometimes they plateau a little bit, and I think you'll see that with some of the...
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm naturally skeptical towards any 17-year-old that's going to be able to...
Yeah.
But I think that Bedard is as close to getting past that as anyone I've ever seen in draft prospects.
And, but you look around, I mean, there's a lot of young, really good players in this league still that are... I mean, you need young talent, like, contract-wise and skill-wise, that... I mean, there was – I forgot who tweeted out the other – a couple weeks ago, but just about the – like, at 23 for forwards, like, it's when you start, like, falling almost.
Right,
like, it's interesting with the –
That's why those entry-level deals are so critical. You have to succeed while they're on those cheap deals, because they lose value. The second they get that big contract, they start losing value unless you're Connor McDavid.
Yeah.
But you look at, like, a team like Dallas and, you know, Jason Robertson and all these great young players they have, like, they never really took that big step back.
Yeah.
They rebuilt on the fly. They did everything the Blackhawks wanted to do but failed at.
If Boqvist and Doc and all those guys,
if they had panned out,
right,
sure, but they didn't pan out. That's the
problem. And you had fixed your defense, like, you fixed the defense. Like, I think a lot of this sort of been
right.
Different,
if Kevin Korchinski becomes Adam Boqvist and, you know, Frank Nazar becomes Kirby Doc, this team's screwed for another 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, like, you need
you got to hit those high ones. Like, you need your, you know, seventh round pick that becomes a superstar. But you also need to make sure you land on the ones that are no doubters.
Yeah. And part of it too was where those contracts lined up. Like, the Blackhawks were worried about, like, even with Doc, like Doc would have been fine on this team, and you said, like, he probably wouldn't have done anything to elevate them to that status. But they were concerned that after this bridge deal, like, it's when you have to pay Doc again, and is he worth $6-7 million, right?
Well, they better hope that Frank Nazar is, you know, a star.
Yeah.
Because Kirby Doc is a serviceable middle six, you know, second line center. And that's not hard. That's not easy to get those guys. Even those guys are hard to come by.
Yeah.
So
I'm not sure Kirby Dach's still a center though. Even like he's
all right. He is a serviceable second line player.
Yeah.
Like he is capable, and there's no guarantee Frank Nazar is going to be that.
No, no.
He's exciting, but is he going to be that? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. All right. So let's look at this draft board a little bit here. Obviously, number one is Patrick Kane.
Yeah.
And it's hard to imagine him still being here in March, isn't it?
No. Yeah.
I know I keep harping on this. I really thought that he was the one that wanted to stay and Taves was the one that wanted out. And as this year has worn on and the reality of how miserable things are have set in, I feel like those roles have switched. I feel like Kane's like, all right, this is just... Because not only is it hard and they're losing, it's affecting his statistics. Like, he's not scoring because he's playing with players that aren't up to his ability.
I think that's where there was hope. Like, he thought coming into the season that you put me with Aaron at the CU and Domi, and the things would click. Like, I can play with anyone, and it just... And he realized, you know, having three left-handed shots and all these different things were just... It didn't work.
There's nobody on this team that can keep up with him, that can play with him, that can do the things that a DeBrincat could, or that a Strome could, or that a, you know, Panarin could.
These guys all need the puck too much, right? Like, for the play with him.
And we always say, Kane is happy as long as he's scoring. And he's not scoring.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's very happy.
Yeah,
he's doing. I mean, he's not. I'm not saying he's out there pouting and shit like that. Like, he seems like he's fine in the room and everything. I don't think he's like, you know, betraying the Hawks in any way or sulking or anything. But I think he's realizing that this is a waste of him.
Yeah.
And he's better off. But now Taves, I'm not so sure now. Taves, I think, I don't know.
The Kane Taves stuff. My eyes were really open with the Kane stuff, doing the Athletic 99 story and him just talking about. And I asked him, like, you know,
some
I know
really
you,
star quotes in there.
You know, you feel like you can play with anyone, but like, do you want to close out your career? Like, what? And he talked about how he wants to play with good players and he wants to have a chance to win. And how he put it that he felt like this was, like, he's had two different careers. Like, I think that the second half is just. I mean, it's been 2015 since they've won a series. You know, like, it's
the only thing I can wonder is the idea of playing with Bedard. Does that entice him enough to say, you know what, I want to see how the draft goes. I'll stick around until the rest of this year.
If you can pick to play with Panarin or Barzal.
Free agency is like 3 days after the draft, right?
Yeah.
Like, can he stick around that long just to, you know, I'll take it. I feel like there's discussions. Until the draft lottery or whatever.
Yeah, maybe until the draft lottery. Because, at that point they would know. Like, if the Blackhawks get the first pick, and they may be coy about it, but they're going to pick Bedard. Like,
well, of course.
Yeah.
And I think that appeals to Kane.
Maybe. It also depends on where, like, what the destinations are. Like, if he gets traded to the Rangers and Panarin and him pick up where he left off,
can't go wrong with that.
You know, like,
is Zibanejad, would he be the number one center there? I mean, that's a pretty good line right there.
I just think the idea of like, even if you play with Bedard next year, like, there's, I don't think it's a playoff team regardless of what they do.
No, I don't think it's a playoff team, but it could fulfill his, like, need to be a good player still,
maybe,
and be a part of it. I'm just saying, I'm grasping at straws here. Like,
yeah.
What would keep him? And I think that, you know,
the thing is, I've been, the whole message boards and our comments have been like, well, what if Kane and Taves stays? And I've been just trying to, like, temper that. Like, most likely.
It's unlikely.
Yes.
It is not even close. It is certainly not impossible that they both stay or that one stays. But it is increasingly unlikely.
The thing is, I don't know if either one gets traded. Like, I don't, like, they have to say that. I don't think there's a contract being offered to them.
That's the big question, right?
Like, I think Kane or Taves would have to publicly say, we want to stay here. Because I think the Blackhawks are ready, not to move on, but it's complicated. And
you can't see them just offering a 3-year, $9 million total, like, you know, $3 million a year contract to Taves just to play out his career and, you know, just be a guy in the room who's like a captain. I could see that. I don't know if they want that.
I don't think that's what they want.
I could see them seeing the value in that.
Maybe. From what I heard, I don't.
And he sells jerseys still.
Yeah, he sells jerseys.
All right, so Taves is on.
But I guess the other part is that it's how much can Jonathan Taves accept? Like, if Connor Bedard comes on, like, everything has to be, like,
geared toward him.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Like, so, yeah, I don't know.
But he could be a bridge captain, even. I mean, there's ways you can do that where, you know, if he's willing to take on that role. Because Taves is not playing more than 3 years in this league.
Yeah.
I don't think the way his body has been breaking down, obviously, and the heavy miles he's logged. He plays a different game than Patrick Kane. It's hard to imagine him playing beyond 37.
Yeah.
Kane, I could see playing until he's 42, because it's just the way he plays.
Yeah.
Taves, I have a hard time seeing that. So, like, if he just says, you know what, I have a chance to retire a Blackhawk, I can just pass the torch and just play it out. I got my three cups. It's not inconceivable, but the Hawks have to want it too, like you said.
I think Taves has to put the Blackhawks in a...
If he says it publicly,
yes. Yeah. I think that's the way it would get done, is that Taves says, I want to stay here, because then it's...
Then they have to give him a contract.
Right, like they have to, yeah. But I don't think that's the Blackhawks' desire.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Max Domi, we had at number three. We touched on him a little bit. Like, it just seems like it's, if they can get something of real value for him, they'll do it. If not, they're fine keeping him. They like him a lot.
Yeah.
Everybody here likes him. I know Max Domi has a bad reputation among fans, but he is really liked in this locker room. He's liked by the team and the coaching staff. If you watch the Blackhawks, he's one of the few guys out there bringing it every night.
Yeah.
Like, he's out there trying. He's producing more than most players in this team. He's not a young guy. He's, what, late 20s, but...
I think he's also a guy that if they can sell someone, like, we just want to give you a 2-year deal and we're going to overpay you.
And they can overpay him, like you said, because they got to get to the floor. That's going to appeal to him. He's 27 years old. Like, you know, he came here with the idea of getting flipped, and the Blackhawks brought him here with the idea of flipping him.
Yeah.
But I think both have kind of come to like each other a lot. Right? I think it's completely possible that if they can't get better than a second-round pick for him, they might just say, fuck it, we'll keep him.
I can see the same thing with Anthony too, like, where they just, like he's been fine enough. Like, he's not... Yeah, he is what he is.
He generates a lot. He just doesn't finish.
Yeah.
So if you put him with better players, then maybe, I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess he was on a line with Patrick Kane. That's a pretty good player. Now we get to, like, the fringe guys where it's like everyone must go. And, you know, Jack Johnson, he makes $950,000. He is statistically the worst player in the NHL this year, I believe. But
that doesn't stop GMs from making decisions with their hearts.
GMs love Jack Johnson. Yeah. And he's a great guy. He is a great guy in the room. It's like a Kimmo Tiimonen situation almost, where you bring in a guy who just makes everything better in the room, and whatever you get out of him on the ice is a bonus. And let's not forget, he just won a cup last year with Colorado. Colorado loves him. They might want to add him just to have him in the room, to have him be an extra guy. Because he played 70-something games with the Avalanche last year and then was benched for the playoffs. But then there was an injury and he got back in and he played fine.
It's a first-rounder for Jack Johnson?
First round, I would say multiple first-rounders, yeah. This is where you're not getting jack squat for these guys. This is like, I'll do you a favor and get rid of you. I mean, these are all mid-round picks we're talking about. Number six, another guy like that, Jujhar Khaira. Mm. Guy everybody likes perfectly. The Blackhawks are a team loaded with bottom six players, right? He might be like the most worthy bottom six player they have. Like, he is a pretty good, solid.
Another guy who's going to just can stay healthy, right?
Like, right, yeah. But, you know, he's a guy who might appeal. He brings a little physicality.
They got a fifth rounder for Ryan Carpenter, which I didn't realize.
Right, yeah. Jujhar Khaira plays a game that I think would translate well to the playoffs.
Yeah.
So it's possible you can move somewhere.
Or just a guy that, I mean, you need some depth guys too, right?
Like, right.
Just, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we always focus on the Canes and Taves of a trade deadline, but the trades that get made are for role
like
players.
Like, I was thinking about Boston. Like, at what point do you just not want to maybe fuck too much around with that chemistry too?
I don't think they're adding a star. I think that they will be adding depth guys. Yeah. I mean, look at who did the 2013 Blackhawks add? They added Michael Hanzies. Who did the 2015 Blackhawks add?
Michael Hanzies played a huge role.
I know. Well, but you didn't think he was when they made that trade.
Who was 2015?
It was Andrew Desjardins. Think about Andrew Desjardins. What a big role he played down that cup run. It's guys like that tend to make the difference. That's what GMs are looking for. They're looking for glue guys and depth guys and, you know, fourth and third liners. So,
And then we went to, I think beyond that, we talked about just a couple guys who are still under contract. Radish and Mitchell. Mm-hmm. And Mitchell, yeah.
Lafferty. Lafferty's got another year on his deal.
Yeah, Lafferty's got a really cheap deal. And
like, these are Sam Lafferty's a guy that if I'm a GM looking for a fourth line energy guy / PK guy, he is an Andrew Desjardins type player. Yeah. Where he works his ass off. He's got really good speed. He creates a nice.
Like, I was just looking at, I think, the last 10 games or something like that, and like his expected goals are I don't remember looking at the season, but he creates a lot. He just can't score.
Guys like Lafferty and Kara on a good team would be really, really valuable pieces. Yeah. Those are the guys that make a difference. And then there's Seth Jones, who is not getting traded.
No,
but he's not getting traded because of the contract more than anything.
Yeah,
but that contract really isn't so bad if you're the Blackhawks. That's a necessary contract to have.
Yeah, and on the short term, yeah.
And the cap's going to go up way up once we get out of this COVID funk here.
Yeah.
Like in a year or two, it's going to go up several million a year. And $9.5 million for a pretty good defenseman, it's going to be an overpay for what Seth Jones brings right now, but Seth Jones is still pretty good. And 9.5 will not be this like egregious albatross that I think people originally thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I think the Blackhawks also would like to see Seth Jones play better. Like, part of it's that, like, early in the season, like, he was good until he got hurt, and then I know that he came back, and his thumb wasn't... But I think the Blackhawks also need Seth Jones, just to resemble sort of the player. Like, I think there's been glimpses of him being that. And I don't know if you're another team. Like, I know there was rumor about Ottawa, and I don't know how you're another team that... There's not much desire over Seth Jones right now either. It's not like he's playing well.
Yeah, you're not getting Adam Fox or Kale McCarr here. You're getting a second pair of guys.
Probably for a really good team,
he's
right?
He's a really good number three right now.
Yeah.
He's a fine number two. He's a really good
number three. And the Blackhawks are hoping that with Kuchinski and whoever else that'll
be his role.
That's it, yeah.
I mean, if you compare Korchinski and Seth Jones for the next 7 years, you'll be all right. That's a pretty good top line, top pairing.
Yeah.
Beyond that, I don't expect it. I don't know about like an Ian Mitchell. What they really
Blackhawks aren't making
this point.
10 trades either, right? Like it's just...
no. They will trade whatever they can trade. I mean, I don't know if Alex Stalock, goalies very rarely get traded at the deadline.
Yeah.
Stalock's on an expiring deal. He's playing pretty well behind a terrible defense. Yeah.
He's got a small sample size now too.
Yeah, but you know, if there's a goalie injury in like late February, he's a guy who could be high on someone's list, a veteran guy. That's
I don't know what else is out there because I feel like there's other goalies out there who might be.
Yeah, you know, Stalock's the kind of guy you add, though. It's possible, you know, it's looking less and less like Ian Mitchell is in the Blackhawks' plans. Yeah. If someone wants to take a flyer on him for fifth or sixth rounder, they'd probably flip that.
I think the hard part with, and this was where the Blackhawks' plan of drafting smaller defensemen, like, it's hard to be dynamic, right? Like, you need to really be something special, I think, to...
It really feels like basically anyone that was in that Stan Bowman draft... of that ideal of that young that Boquist Mitchell type defenseman, the Davidson and Richardson have no use for.
Yeah,
like Ian Mitchell is better.
Like you just say, it was unrealistic to have Bodan, Boquist, Jokiharu, and
Jokiharu is another one. Yeah, I mean
none of those guys are ever going to play together. Probably like the game hasn't changed that much, right? Like
right, but you know Ian Mitchell is better than what they've got out there right now.
No, for sure,
but they're not playing him because they don't care.
Yeah, like that's the odd thing is that
There's no
developmental like thought process to like who they're playing right now as much, right?
Like what are we doing here? What is the point of the season? There's nobody they could call up, Lucas Reichel, anyone else that they could bring up that's going to ruin this tank.
Yeah.
Like nobody. So why wouldn't you play, you know, Ian Mitchell over Jack Johnson? Because they don't give a shit about Ian Mitchell. Like I just get the sense that he's not a high priority for them.
Yeah.
He was a high priority for the previous administration. This administration doesn't believe in him, which is their right. Like they analyze.
It has to be someone Luke Richardson.
Absolutely part of it. When I mean he's part of this administration, certainly. I don't think he's his type of player.
Yeah.
And you know Mitchell, there's highs and lows. You know he made a really nice play on the Kane goal the other night, and he also got burned a couple of times. Yeah. I mean he's. Not what Stan Bowman made him out to be.
No.
But he's better than he used to be, and he's not getting much of a chance when you're only playing once every four games.
Like, what's the point of not just putting him out there? Just get him out.
Like Isaac Phillips looks pretty good. Great. Put Mitchell out there, too. There's no reason Jack Johnson can't sit a game here or there.
Yeah.
He's not a part of the future.
Right.
There's at least a chance that Ian Mitchell is part of your future. I don't understand the player management so far. I get that you don't want to expose rookies to this moribund, dreadful season. But
they're up here. They're already being exposed.
Right.
You know?
And beyond that, like this team, to its credit, and Derek King, who was filling in for Luke Richardson this morning because Richardson's sick, mentioned this. Like, this team has handled this really well. And Jack Johnson and Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane, they deserve a lot of credit. And Max Domi, Connor Murphy, they deserve a lot of credit for that. This team is handling what should be the saddest, most miserable team ever. They're doing pretty well mentally. And I don't think that there's a terrible culture in this room.
No.
I think you can bring up Reichel. I think that it was okay that Soderblom was up here. I think you can bring up Ian Mitchell and play him. I think you can bring all these guys, give him a chance, rotate him in and out.
Yeah.
it's you don't have to protect these guys from the 2023 Blackhawks.
And we may see more of that like closer after the deadline too. Like
well, after the deadline, they have no choice. I mean, nobody left on the team.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just feel like they're being too protective at this point because they're afraid of like exposing them to this. And this is bad from our standpoint, and it's bad from the team standpoint. It's bad from the fan standpoint. But in that room, they have a pretty good, healthy perspective on what this season is. Everyone came into the season with eyes wide open. They know what this is. And I think as a result, they're handling it better than you might expect.
Yeah. No, I agree. Yeah. Everyone's been,
it's been surprising. Like
more upbeat than
I think we were dreading like having to write features off guys in this room because they would just be sitting there pouting the whole time. And it really hasn't been that way. Yeah. Like they don't like it. Nobody's happy about it. But there's a lot of, hey, man, this is still the best job in the world stuff. You know, getting a lot of
I get, you have no other choice. Like at this point, like there's whatever games left, 40?
Too many.
But it's like, I guess you're just, it's like, you know, like either you choose to be
it's their job
for next
it's their job
4 months. Or
I think they're looking at the season the way you and I are looking at the season. It's like, all right, there's still worse ways to make a living than covering a shitty hockey team that people are tuning out on.
So I'm sure it's a little bit easier.
Maybe you. I make Seth Jones money. I don't know what you're talking about. But I think that's the attitude they've got. It's like, all right, this year is a lost year.
Yeah.
And maybe some of us will be rescued in March at the trade deadline. But, you know. Honestly, it's the same way you and I are approaching the job. Where, you know, we're going to do the best we can. We're going to try to make it fun as much as we can, and try to keep people engaged. And just, you know, there's worse ways to make a living.
Yeah, no, for sure. Everyone talks about like oh, you know, what else would you do? And I was like,
I have no other marketable skills.
No, I've become too accustomed like this lifestyle. And it's weird, and we work odd hours and all these things. But I just there's not a day where I still like oh, I wish I hate this job. Like it.
Yeah, no.
Days where I struggle to find something to write, but it's still.
There's days where I'm, especially back when I was at the Sun Times and like doing every single game, 41 road games a year, where I was like on death's door. I was so tired, but no point that I think I'd rather be doing something else.
Yeah.
So. I think that these players have a good, healthy perspective on the same idea where it's like, look, this isn't what I imagined it was going to be, but it's still pretty great.
Yeah. It also, there's a bunch of guys who could be in Rockford, and I think that difference in that bump and pay. Like,
oh, yeah. Oh, if you're on a two-way deal? Oh, hell yeah. You're going from making our money to making their money. That's pretty good.
Yeah. I've been slightly different. I've been surprised at the fan. Like, they had 19,000 here the other day.
Yeah.
It's like the first game. I'm sure people get Christmas tickets and stuff.
Can we at least put away the nonsense of the bandwagon fan idea? Like, any fans that came aboard during Kane and Tay's early years, they're just fans now.
Yeah.
Like, this building.
You've watched a lot. Like, people have seen a lot of bad hockey in the last 5 years.
Yeah, and they're still coming.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is the biggest building in the league.
Yeah.
And so the capacity looks bad. Like, they're low in the rankings when it turns to capacity.
Well, they're low in the rankings. Like, they're still, like, 20-something in, like, average attendance.
But
it's better than I thought it
was. This team wanted to make they needed to sell about 14,000 tickets a game to not have this be an economic disaster. They're well over that. They're in the 16,000 games. Like, they're doing a
good. I was just looking
at the fans are showing up.
Yeah.
You know, and again, a lot of that has to do with Kane and Taves. Will they keep showing up in mid-March? I mean, fortunately for the Blackhawks, they're on the road like all of March. But what will those home games be like if they're both gone? Because if they're here, or if only one of them is here, those last few home games are going to be events. And they're going to sell a lot of tickets to those meaningless games in April if it's Jonathan Taves' swan song or Patrick Kane's swan song.
If the Blackhawks can plan that, it's probably like the easiest way, you know? Like, they're.
Well, what'll be interesting is if their future's still in limbo.
Yeah.
Like, if they don't get traded, if one or both don't get traded, and there's been no discussion about a contract, but it's not impossible, it's going to be like a farewell tour. Then it'll be like really weird. Like, oh, we're back for a 3-year deal.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder if I mean, they're going to have sit-down conversations here, it sounds like, this month, like, with Brisson and Davidson. Like, I imagine they gauge, like, because Kane and Taves probably want to have some idea, like, beyond this season too.
Oh,
like,
sure. And again, the Bedard factor is really significant here, I think. Bedard changes things. It changes the timeline. It speeds it up. It changes the excitement level of still being here.
Yeah.
Bedard, like, Patrick Kane is a guy who watches a lot of hockey. I guarantee you he keeps an eye on World Juniors.
Yeah, for sure.
And he's seeing what Connor Bedard is doing, and he's thinking, how does that play mesh with mine? And he's getting excited.
Yeah.
It's possible that if anything keeps him here, that's what's going to keep him here.
Yeah.
But it's still unlikely. Yeah. Still unlikely. But that idea of playing with Bedard, I think that appeals to him a lot. So, anyway, only 35 more podcasts to go. we'll come up with some guests and some fun stuff over the next few weeks.
Yeah, let us know what you want to. I put out something on the story today. Like, if they have people have story ideas or ideas, let us know.
Send some fun questions to Scott's mailbag. I'll probably be doing one during the bye week later this month.
Yeah, we'll have some guests.
There's still plenty to talk about. Like I said, there's worse jobs to have. So anyway, until next time, I'm Mark Lazarus. That's Scott Powers. See ya.
And I know that I can't fix it. I can help even just a little.